It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium. We have with us
Colleen Chapin. I work as a substance use professional.
Someone like me, addicted to nicotine for decades and decades. I grew up in a time when it wasn't so bad.
It was cool to smoke.
I was a cool kid on the block, you know, go across the street in high school and get off the property. And
Did you go to Aberdeen?
No, I grew up in Tacoma. I went to Stadium, the castle, but it was the same thing. Go across the street on the hill. And that was it. The nicotine addiction, I mean, obviously I can function. I function throughout the day, and it used to be in the old days in this business, I would be smoking in here in the studio.
Right.
That doesn't happen anymore. The person who is addicted to a stronger, and do I
a
say?
Substance that interferes with, you know, main domains of life.
Yeah, with your life. More the nicotine affects me because I can't smoke on airplanes anymore. I can't smoke in restaurants anymore. I mean, it does affect my life in that regard. But we're talking about something a lot more, I mean, literally the downfall of your life.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, on some of these other substances. Can you talk them out of it?
No.
Okay. You can't just say.
I think you can have respectful, kind, compassionate conversations that, you know, may lead to, you know, some open doors, you know, that letting them know that there are things available. There's, you know, programs that are available. There's, you know, like Summit Pacific, they have a great MAP program. You can go up there and walk through the urgent care and just tell them you want to be on a MAP program, and they'll take you through their very, very respectful process.
What's a MAP program?
The medication-assisted treatment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And they deeply interview you so they know, you know, what path that would be best for you to go down, whether it's getting the Vivitrol shot in a 30-day shot all the way up to buprenorphine, you know, or Suboxone, as we call it. Those are the things that are available. You can let people know that. A lot of people are, especially heroin addicts, they are deathly afraid of withdrawal. You know, withdrawal is painful. I mean, you're not going to die from it, but it is extremely painful. It's like the worst flu times 100.
I've heard that some heroin addicts say during the withdrawal period they wish they would die.
Right.
Because it's just so painful and so terrible to go through. These medications ease up on that withdrawal process?
Yep. It can take withdrawal right out of the equation.
Really?
So then you're dealing with the behavioral aspects of being addicted to, say, heroin. You know, the rituals that you're involved in, the people that you're involved with, the people, places, and the things. You know, those are the things that you go get treatment and talk with folks about that and figure out how to develop a social network that is, you know, going to be supportive of you being in recovery.
Not revolving around the drugs.
Right.
Yeah, because if you are an addict, your social life does revolve around those drugs.
Right. Because
getting them, taking them, being friends with friends who do it, the same thing.
Absolutely. You have to know where you can go get your stuff.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So in that case, the family can help. What if the family is no longer in play, if you will? Okay, I'm going to just say, like, some of the people on the street that are addicted to heroin, they live on the street. Maybe they didn't even grow up in this area. They imported in here or something. They have no family around. They have no friends around. It's pretty much them and their fellow drug users.
Well, and interventions, too, can come by way of just, I mean, intervention doesn't have to be an event. It can be a process, you know, where you're having that initial conversation with that person. You're accepting of right where they're at, you know, and just letting them know that you're available if they want help. You know, sometimes that opens the door to, you know, a next conversation and a next conversation, but maybe they don't seek out the MAT or outpatient program right away, but they know it exists now.
It's in the mind.
And they think about that person that talked to them, and they seem to care. You know, those kinds of things. I don't know that we can ever... I'm thinking of a term my grandma said. I'm not sure I could say it on the radio.
Go ahead.
Okay, so they're not going to be bitched into enlightenment. Let's just put it that way.
Okay,
you know,
I understand.
Nobody learns that way. You know, And I feel like there's a lot of folks out there who have come through the jail systems, who have come through the CPS systems. They have been, you know, literally bitched into enlightenment. It's like, you're going to do this, or you're not going to, you know, you're not going to have your kids, or you're not going to have a free life, or whatever it is. And that's the way they interpret it. And so they're in this place where they're wanting to fight back. You know, we're human beings, and we have a tendency to, you know, we have a fight or flight system. We, you know, when people are forcing us into a corner, we want to come out fighting.
Right.
You know.
Okay. The you just brought up, you know, people losing their families and the such, and there is a turnaround. I mean, you can turn yourself around.
Right.
With the help of treatment programs, with the help of the medications, but there is a way to turn around. Personal experience: a good friend of mine, his daughter got into the drug scene, very bad for a couple of years. Lost the husband, lost the kids. Didn't care.
Right.
Didn't care.
Yeah, you're in it, all you care about is getting that next hit.
Getting that next hit, and that's it. Bounced around from couch to couch, whatever. Didn't have a place to live. All of a sudden, it hit her. This is several years later now. She's just become a registered nurse. She has all of her kids back. She has a great relationship with a man.
Yeah,
she's living in a home now. It can be done.
Absolutely. As long as someone's still alive, there's hope. There's always hope.
As long as they haven't killed themselves already.
Right, yeah. Or overdosed.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a really high rate of overdosing. You know, it's even gotten worse since COVID, I believe.
Oh, really?
That's my understanding.
Really? Mm-hmm. Any reason why? Just because of the COVID thing being that you have to be so isolated?
The disease itself is isolating. That's one of the natures of it. And it's, people get all by themselves mentally, emotionally, and a lot of times physically. And then when something like the COVID hit us, a pandemic where we're expected to stay by ourselves or stay, you know, quarantined and that kind of thing, that really sets folks up who are already experiencing an isolated disease process in their body. And now you're telling them they've got to isolate even more. I mean, it doesn't help. It doesn't help at all.
And unfortunately, your dealer doesn't isolate.
Right.
I mean,
they figure a way to get it out.
The heck with COVID. You need your drugs. I'll get them to you as long as you pay me. Availability.
Availability here on the harbor?
Well, here on the harbor, just in general, availability. If it wasn't available, could something be done about it, or would these people just find something else? Let's say there's no more heroin in the world. No more opioids in the world. Are they going to find something else?
Absolutely. Look at what happened during Prohibition. They supposedly took alcohol out of our hands, and we made it out of dandelions, I'm sure.
I think
we want our stuff, we'll get our stuff.
Somebody wrote a song about that dandelion wine, I believe. They will find something. An addictive personality, or is it just something because of their life and what has happened in their life that is causing that? Or are certain people born with an addictive personality, for lack of a better term?
Well, I don't know if addictive personality is an actual diagnosis. It isn't. So there's you have people who grew up with, you know, some backgrounds that were really challenging, and maybe there was also addiction that runs in the family. So they're set up in two ways, environmentally and biologically. You know, if they've got those two components, the minute they take something into their system, it's liable to start a wildfire. You know, they're going to become addicted. That feels good to them. They've witnessed it while they were growing up. They saw what, you know, was going on around them, and that's how people coped. And so they've adopted that for themselves, and they're real susceptible to having that take off like a wildfire because they've already got the biological component. This is how we live component,
right?
You know, in the family. There's other people that come from, you know, families that don't appear to have any addiction in them. Like, say mom and dad raised a bunch of, you know, a few kids and mom and dad didn't drink, mom and dad didn't use drugs. But maybe mom and dad's parents were addicted. You know, you have a mom and a dad come together that say, that's never going to happen in my home. You know, and so they raise their kids in an abstinent family to, you know, do everything they can to stay away from drugs and alcohol. But the minute that kid gets with some friends that are maybe using, and it takes off, like, from a biological standpoint, I mean, it could be in the family, like, generations back, even though you have a mom and dad that are trying to raise kids that aren't affected by drugs and alcohol.
Freddie went to the kegger.
Yeah.
And the mom and dad have kept him away from alcohol all this time. But Freddie ended up the kegger. And
he liked it.
And he liked it. And all of a sudden we find out grandma-grandpa or great-grandma-grandpa had a problem.
Well,
and is it hereditary?
Yeah, it can be hereditary. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you have mom and dad who maybe grew up with alcoholism or addiction in their family. Mm-hmm. And now they're raising kids away from that influence, but a lot of times mom and dad who were raised by their parents who were addicted have some certain attitudes and behaviors and beliefs and ways that they go about things that are almost like an alcoholic or an addict, but they just don't drink or use.
Wow.
And that affects the kids. You know, there's like some fear-based things that are going on or some things that are going on in the family that nobody's talking about it. Some more denial.
It is really a complicated situation, isn't it?
It is.
I mean... It
can be. That's why...
Is there an answer? Will there ever be an answer? I mean, I know we're working in the right direction. You've talked about, over the past couple of decades, how things have improved in medication and intervention and all kinds of things, so we're working on it.
Right.
Will it ever?
The disease,
and I don't want you not to have a job, but will it ever?
Oh, and I would wish I could work myself out of this job. That would be utopia. I mean, that would be wonderful. You know, but a lot of times addiction, when you see it with your eyes, it looks awful. You know, we see people doing destructive things with their lives. It looks awful. But, you know, my hope is that we get to a place someday where we're as empathetic when we see those things happening in people's lives as we are for, like, say, the diabetic who needs insulin. Mm-hmm. You know, they are on a medication-assisted treatment of sorts as well.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't look at them the same way we do as an addict or an alcoholic. You know, and it'd be great if we could, you know.
And that's just a society stigma type thing.
Right. It's a stigma.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. The effectiveness of an abstinence-based or a harm reduction, is one more effective than the other? Does it depend upon the person?
I would say they're equally effective, and people who enter into those processes are affected in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I just think when people are given the choice to enter into a treatment process, it makes a difference. And those usually, I'm not talking about the one who shows up and goes, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, I need to stop, you know, because they probably haven't experienced enough pain. But when we're looking at harm reduction programs, those are people who have went far down the scale in their addiction. And we're just trying to get them to enter in little by little, you know. And if they can go from, you know, shooting up to taking Suboxone, their life is going to change dramatically. Because they're going to get out of that whole scene where they're, you know, having to go get this stuff, having to go get the needles, having to, you know, and all the kind of the criminal behavior that comes in with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to get away from that, hopefully. That's the hope in some of the harm reduction programming.
You have somebody, you talked about the criminal aspect. I need to get my drugs. I need to go rob this place or whatever.
Right.
The criminal aspect of it to get the money so they can keep their drug habit going. The person who is trying to get off, even with the harm reduction, we're using the medications and the everything, is there a, for lack of a better term, a safety net? I mean, if I'm trying to get off heroin and I'm in a program, but maybe I still don't have a place to live. Maybe I still don't have a job. Is there a support program other than the meetings you go to?
Well, there's been a lot of new programs that have come to the table, like Housing First programs. There's a multitude of programs in our community to help people get housing. You know, over at the CAP office, the Coastal Community Action Program, you can go there and go through what they call coordinated entry. Everybody has to go through coordinated entry. And what that does is it looks at the, you know, what's going on with them right now. Do they have housing? Do they have food? Do they have the age, blind, and disability benefits? Do they need to be on hand? Do they need, you know, what do they need right now to get them started? And when they go through that, when they go through the housing portion of it, that program is looking for how to get them housed, regardless of whether they're using or drinking. Yes, they also have, you know, the ability to connect with the clean and sober housing, which, you know, you do need to be, you know, 30 days clean and sober to be able to move into, like, say, an Oxford house. Mm-hmm. But they do have other housing available. Like, there's programs in our community, behavioral health programs, that there's some that have connection to their own housing, you know, and maybe someone is on their program and going through their behavioral treatment, so they have access to that housing through that. But like the hub is at the CAP office, where you go through coordinated entry. And yes, housing first model, I mean, yeah, if you can get somebody housed, that's a huge deal, to be able to have a roof over your head at night.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's the start, you know, and then there's case managers that, you know, come in and work with folks to, you know, get them to the next thing and the next thing. And is it a perfect model? Well, no, because addiction's not perfect, that's for sure. Very unpredictable, very cunning, baffling, and powerful. So, you know, I mean, there are processes out there where people are working on getting people in houses, in homes. You know, and it's a day-to-day working out the nuts and bolts of being able to do that for people.
I'm a family member of someone who is, I'm not talking for myself, but say I'm a family member who has a family member who is addicted and is not doing well, maybe doesn't have a home, sleeping from couch to couch, friends and other addicts and the such. As a family member, what should I do to try to get that person headed in the right direction? Are there people that I can talk to? Should I come to the CAP office? Should I?
You can call any of the drug and alcohol or substance use agencies here to even have that conversation. What can I do? You know, and those folks that work at those agencies, you know, the Harbor Crest, CIHS, CMAR, Columbia Wellness, Lifeline. There's a bunch of agencies here now in the harbor. Uh-huh. We're blessed right now to have a lot of substance use professionals here. Call and have that conversation. Ask what can I do?
So there are places that a family member can contact
and have that conversation. Absolutely.
You were talking about how we are fortunate enough to have so many agencies now.
Right. There was a time when it was just Harbor Crest and CMAR.
Is that a good thing that we have so many of the agencies?
Absolutely.
Doesn't that mean that we have a worse problem?
No, it means that we're addressing our problem that already existed. And we could have 50 agencies here doing that work, and it still wouldn't put a dent in it, I don't think.
Really?
And that's true for most communities.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for most communities. I traveled around the state in one of my previous positions, marketing, and each agency that I went to thought that they had the worst methamphetamine problem in the state. And that was across the state of Washington. So everybody's got that problem and the heroin problem.
And did they have the worst methamphetamine problem, or did some other town say, "Here, hold my beer.
Yeah.
I got this."
No,
you know,
yeah. Everybody thinks that they have the worst problem, but I think our state, you know, we have a big problem in our state. We have a big problem all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm grateful that we have so many agencies here now that can, you know, step up and help people with their addictions.
Is something geographical about it too? Is one place geographically worse than another? They always say around here, I mean, today is not the day, but most days it's gray and it's rainy and it's
right.
Depressing and we can even go back to the Kurt Cobain talking about how dark and dank and even though he had other mental problems besides that, I've heard him say that we have per capita the worst alcoholic rate in the state of Washington because of our gray weather at Grays Harbor.
Right. And, you know, we do have some pretty high statistics in Grays Harbor County. You know, and as far as, you know, there's a lot of folks that get sent from mental hospitals and shipped to Grays Harbor County.
I've heard that. Is that true? Because I didn't know if that was an urban legend or not.
No, it's not an urban legend, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah. And so I think that there was, when the mental hospitals went through their deinstitutionalization process, they gave them bus tickets to Grays Harbor County. you know, because the services were easy to get here and that type of thing. So
it's cheaper to live down here and easier to get services.
Yeah, we do have some of that. We do work on some of that.
Has that stopped? Or are we still, not that
I'm aware of.
We're still getting sent people.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that just within the past couple of months that someone said that that does happen.
Right.
And so it really does. Abstinence and harm reduction can go either way. It depends on the person.
Right. And, you know, I think it's just... It's another way to approach working with people with behavioral health conditions, whether it's mental health or it's substance use. Harm reduction is a way to come in right where someone's at and not force it, but just let them know that it's available to them, you know, and do it with respect and dignity. And, you know, it goes a long ways.
My doctor made a comment to me. Once again, going back to my nicotine addiction, made a comment to me, hey, we have the science and the drugs to help. Why not use them? Good statement in regards to the harm reduction.
Yeah, or it's available when you're ready, you know. There's a lot of programs out there that are even like, you know, they're, you know, helping people shoot up with clean dope, you know. And as they're doing that, they're also telling them that, you know, there's programs available. If this is something that you want to look at and something you want to reduce or stop altogether, we're here.
A lot of talk. You know? There's been a lot of talk around here about the needle exchange thing. When the needle exchange program was going on, were the people who were in that needle exchange process, I'm talking about not the addicts, but the people providing the needles and everything, were they talking to them about it? Or was it just handing out the needles?
I think that each program had the ability to bring them brochures from their agencies. Mm-hmm. Each program was invited to be able to be at the needle exchange, mm-hmm. to be able to talk to folks. I went there a few times and just had conversations with people that were coming to exchange their needles, mm-hmm. you know, and just introducing myself, telling them what I do, letting them know that there's services available if they ever want to get help. And I think that that's one of the ways that that could be very helpful is, come exchange your needles. But there's also people there that care about your situation that are going to probably talk to you. That doesn't do any harm. Yeah, if you're there and you're picketing them or screaming at them or preaching at them, that's not going to get them help. That's not going to get them the help that they need. Hmm. You know, they didn't get addicted overnight. This is a process. We think we're going to be in control of it when we start out.
That's it. You know, oh, wow, that makes me feel good. I like that. But
if you've got the genetics and you got the upbringing that is contrary to that, it's like you might as well light a match and set the forest on fire because that's what's going to happen in the person's brain. You know, it's going to be a hostage takeover.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.